Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check, you're subscribed to the new feed, because the old one is going to go pretty soon. Check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple, search the Nat Coombs Show, make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Really looking forward to catching up with Neil Reynolds, because of course we'll talk some current football, but the chat is more about Neil, him falling in love with the game, his career to date, and a few other detours as well. It's worth pointing out that we recorded this at the end of April, but we're dropping it slightly after that. So if some massive story is broken and you think it's weird that Neil and I are not talking about it, that is why. All right. This was recorded at the end of April, coming out soon after, but maybe not, maybe missing one or two big things. So if Belichick has left the Patriots and we didn't talk about it, now you know why. So really looking forward to catching up with Neil, and lots of pods coming your way over May. Keep your eyes and ears peeled to the channel. And if you haven't already, subscribe and you won't miss a trick. Let's get straight down to it then and check in with the great Neil Reynolds. Neil, great to have you on in incredibly strange times, of course. But good times for you, because straight off the bat, let's get down to business and the Neil Reynolds podcast flying. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying doing that. You're right, it's strange times. So everyone's trying to keep background noise to a minimum. I can tell you, I've got one dog out in the back garden crying to come in. I've got one really lazy dog about 6 foot from me who is snoring like a train. So if you hear that, I apologize in advance. But yes,
we mustn't get them together with Rufus, Mike Carlson's dog, because that could be very messy. Because I'm guessing you're two are Dolphins fans, obviously, your two dogs. What are your dogs' names?
My dogs are Rosie, is a chocolate Rosie lab, and Harper is a red lab.
Harper, I love it. Great name. Are they, presumably they're Finns fans. They have to be Team Finns.
They are. We've already decided as well, because we kind of like get out in the garden and we throw American footballs around, of course. And Rosie's a bit chunky. She's a chocolate lab. So we reckon Rosie's a linebacker, like a sort of downhill thumper type.
A thumper, yes.
Harper's like this ball of annoying energy. So she's a cornerback, because she kind of follows you. We've already got it all planned
and
out.
Mouthing. I love
way
it.
Off topic already, I know.
As is often the way with us, yeah. So, the Neil Reynolds podcast, let's get back to that. So I'm actually, you and I are recording this as so many people are doing with their work at the moment via Zoom, so we can see each other, and I can see in the Reynolds merch wall, which has Neil Reynolds podcast merch already minted. That looks like some kind of hoodie, is it? Or a sweatshirt?
That is a t-shirt, yes. That Smart. Is a t-shirt. So, the podcast has been really fun. And the idea was, you know, I think it's a great podcast community that we've got now. And yourself, myself and Jeff Reinbold on Inside the Huddle, we all kind of react to those news stories and the news of the day. So I don't want to do the same, because I already do that with Jeff. You already do that. So many people already do that. So, so I just decided to just tell stories and not really get headlines. I'm not looking to break news. I'm not looking to kind of create drama. I just want people to be able to tell their football story. So, I decided to start with a bit of a bang and went out to Florida just before everything kind of shut down. And
yeah, good timing.
Yeah, just reached out to Fitz and said, can I come and do an interview? And he was like, well, don't just do an interview, let's go fishing. And I'd never fished in my life. So, so that was a lot of fun. Then did Bruce Arians, Peter King, was episode 3. So, yeah, got some big names lined up. And I think just having extended chats with people who I kind of have good contacts with, just let them tell their stories, just do something different.
I love that. I think it's a great idea. And as you say, you've already had some fantastic guests on it. And yeah, there is absolutely, you know, the more the merrier, really, in that respect. And in terms of loads of us professionally, personally, have a collection of pods that we go to for different reasons and different moods. And I think it nails that. And I love the format particularly. It got me thinking, because obviously I'm not going to plagiarize the idea, but I do like the concept of having a similar thing, like an in-depth chat. One-on-one, but with the bad boys of the NFL. So I'm thinking I might launch my own one with, you know, Vontaze Burfict, Fred Smoot. What do you think? Just, it'd probably be quite a short series, maybe five or six before we get to
the NFL. Good luck getting that access. At some point along the way, one of them is going to hit you.
Yeah. Inevitably.
I'm pretty sure you'll triple my numbers because that's what we really want to hear about.
I'm going to work on that idea. Well, listen, congrats with it. And the Neil Reynolds podcast, you can find that obviously on all good pod catches. We're not going to do something wildly dissimilar to that show actually today. I thought it's a lot of you and I have both put out shows and written about the draft, lots of pods and writing over the last couple of weeks and free agency, everything else. So I want to spend time talking to you. And I remember you came into the ESPN studio last season and we kind of did a bit of a hybrid show where we had a lot of business to cover and we were previewing, I think, the weekend and getting your take on that. But we kept deviating off down different roads. And I thought, let's do a bit more of that. I want to do a bit more of that because we've known each other for a long time. Our listeners, of course, have followed you for a very long time. And as we touched on in that episode, maybe you don't get enough time to talk about you. So that's what I want to do a little bit more on on this show. So let's start right at the very beginning. When did you first fall in love with the NFL? You were a youngin, but do you remember the first time you saw the NFL? The first time you discovered it?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. I think it was, again, like a lot of people at that time, the Channel 4 era moving, you know, through that highlight show.
Were you always Team Luckhurst? Was he always your favourite?
So that was, see, I did like Mick Luckhurst. Mm. Yeah, I did. And I think that's that and Gary Imlach are the ones that kind of really, really resonate with me. But I remember watching or being on in the background. And my dad watching it. My dad was a big 49ers fan. He loved Joe Montana. And I just didn't get it. And I was like laying on the floor playing with my Star Wars figures. I mean, to be fair, I put in when I was 18 as well, but that's a
It's the point you don't have any of your Star Wars figures up behind you on the Reynolds. Have a little Boba Fett. Sneak Boba Fett in the corner.
Yeah, this isn't finished yet. That's going to happen.
Who's your favourite Star Wars character?
My favourite Star Wars character.
Yeah, you're Chewie. Ah, yeah, that makes sense. I could see you as,
We went to Florida a couple of years ago and we queued up and met Chewie and my kids were just laughing because I was nearly crying.
Ah, Chewie, he's always got your back. I love that. That's a good choice. I'm definitely R2-D2. I'm Team R2 all the way.
Do you think anyone's ever been C-3PO? No.
Never. Never.
So my dad was watching it. I'm just don't get it. I was like, I don't get this sport. They're just crashing into the line. And it was a Dan Marino moment. So it was 83 season. One of the highlights they showed was the Dolphins playing the Raiders. And Marino came off the bench. And I wasn't really into American football then, but I was into sports. And I love sports drama and people commentating on sports. Mm. And these commentators were going crazy about this curly-haired rookie who'd come off the bench. So I just started watching. And after that, I'd sit and watch it every week. And so by the 84 season and 85, I was like really, really into it. And obviously the Dolphins were doing really well then. I got to the Super Bowl in the 84 season. I thought, this is what it's always going to be like. It's going to be Super Bowls all over the place. So really, yeah, that's how I got into it, the Channel 4 stuff, through my dad watching. Just became more and more into it. By the sort of late 80s, you know, I knew all the names, all the numbers, all the stats. My dad was, kind of telling me off and not studying for my GCSEs and knowing, he said, if you know more, if you knew as much or put as much effort into your schoolwork as you do NFL stats, you might get somewhere in your life. Those are the words he said.
If only there was an NFL GCSE, that would be, maybe there will be one day, that would be a star for us. It's Mick Luckhurst is an interesting one because, and this is something I wanted to talk to you about as well. We've definitely joked about this off camera, off mic, but when we do the London games, the Wembley games specifically, our studios are next to each other with that makeup room essentially in between, right? It's a kind of holding room, and yeah. You go to the right, it's Sky, to the left, it's the Channel 4 in the old days, the BBC, obviously more recently. And so there's that whole Anchorman vibe going on anyway. But you often we share the same guest, right? So if they bring a guest up, Harry Connick Jr. will come and do 10 minutes with us, 10 minutes with you, and that kind of thing. Did you get Mick Luckhurst when he did it? And this might have been back when it was Channel 4. I don't know if you were doing that game because obviously, you know, some games we do together, some games are split. And I know Sky have been doing a lot of pitch side stuff. Did you get Mick Luckhurst on?
So we were pitch side, and I don't think we got Mick, but I'd worked with him the day before. We did one of the NFL UK Lives on the morning the big events that they do around the games. I think it was in, we were still in Trafalgar Square then. Mick was quite a character, but I don't think we got him. I think we were doing it from the sidelines. You were in the studio that day, so I don't think I think we alternated certain guests, so we didn't get Mick on our show, but I did get to work with him quite a bit.
Because I don't know if you felt the same, but this will resonate with you. So when you get those guests coming up, and I mentioned like Harry Connick Jr., you know, stars like that, but also it could be Goodell, it could be Marshall Faulk, Jim Kelly, I've gone on record many times saying was my absolute favorite and a complete hero of mine for all kinds of reasons. And so you have this, it is surreal with all these, particularly the legends and the figures from when we were kids and growing up and in love with the game and now in front of you. But Luckhurst was one of the biggest for me for that reason and I looked out into that atrium or that, you know, that into that linking room between the studios, you know, through the cameras, past the cameras, and to see who's being made up. And it was Mick Luckhurst. He just had this beaming smile and kind of winked over. I was like, bloody hell, Mick Luckhurst is about to come on the Channel 4 coverage. And that's how I fell in love with it back in the day. So the Luckhurst was maybe the most, amongst the most starstruck out of all.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm not one for having a lot of photos with people that I do interviews with. So I like to, obviously a lot of the events that I do with NFL UK, they photograph it all. And I love to have the pictures, but I don't really ask for a photo with anyone. I've done it once in the whole time. That was when I was at Joe Montana's house in San Francisco. So I don't really do it. But Mick Luckhurst was out at one of the training sessions out of the Grove. I think we were out of the Grove. And I was chatting to Mick Luckhurst and Vernon. Mm. And Vernon was like, we've got to get a picture. Yeah, and I was like, yeah, we, Mick, I'm sorry, but we've got to have a picture with you. And it's, you're right. We've interviewed Dan Marino, Jim Kelly, all these greats. And Mick Luckhurst as a player wouldn't be on that level. Mm. But I was the same as you. I was really excited. I was the same way when the Bucks came over and we had Brad Johnson. Alumni. And Brad was obviously the quarterback for the London Monarchs in 95. I used to go to all those games, loved watching Brad Johnson. And, I was probably as excited about having Brad Johnson as I was about some of these superstars of the league. It was
it's funny, isn't it? Yeah. I'm trying to think, the only time I've gone down that selfie route was Ric Flair at the most recent Super Bowl. That's when I finally succumbed. Like, you see Flair, you're going, I went all in on that.
Yeah, I work with someone who's very close to Ric Flair anyway. Jeff Reinbold's got a bit of Ric Flair in him, so I don't need to meet Ric.
Strangely enough, Jeff was with me when it happened, or Jeff gave me the inspiration because he was, you know, as obviously you know, but for listeners, when we're on Radio Row and it's this, you know, constellation of all kinds of crews and we're all bouncing around there and doing our shows and doing this and that. And people like Ric Flair are just wandering past. And it was Jeff. I saw this commotion of Flair and I kind of hesitated and I thought, no. And then Jeff piled straight in for the selfie. And I thought, right, okay. If it's good enough for him, I'm in there as well. So
if you ever see Ric Flair at the Super Bowl within a 30 meter radius around him, somewhere will be Jeff Reinbold.
So let's talk. You mentioned the Monarchs. So you fell in love with the game. Were you always going to be? And you started as a journalist, and obviously transitioned into a broadcast journalist and broadcasting. And I definitely want to talk to you about that and the differences and between writing, television, and radio, and the live stuff you do as well. But were you always going to be a journalist and particularly an NFL journalist, or did you stumble into it?
So I wanted to be an NFL journalist and I started writing for, I did a couple of work experience stints with First Down in 91. And then I worked for Gridiron the first time around. There was a Gridiron magazine. I used to write for them, 91, 92. But I wasn't actually a qualified journalist then. So I was just kind of winging it. So I actually went away and became a journalist working for a local newspaper. But I, all the while through my journalist training, I talked about getting back into American football, and people kept saying to me, don't specialize too soon, don't specialize too soon. And so I qualified as a journalist in 96. And by 97, I was working at First Down, back at First Down. So I always wanted to cover American football. I actually got asked this question a few days ago about the transition into TV. Did I always want to be on TV? And that was a resounding no. I just wanted to work in the NFL or cover the NFL. So I started as a journalist, did those three years at First Down, then 6 years at NFL Europe working for the league. And quite frankly, I would still be kind of would have been happy doing that had I not been laid off and made redundant. And then when I was laid off, I followed other avenues, and that's when I stumbled into the TV. I'm not one of those that just wanted to be on TV. I would work wherever as long as it's covering the NFL. So it's more about the NFL than TV, you know?
Yeah, which I think is absolutely should be is the right way around, right? And I, because we first worked together on radio, right? And had you done some TV by then?
Yes. So I'd done, we did what, 2009, 2010 seasons on BBC Radio 5 Live together?
Yeah.
Before that, I'd started doing some TV stuff, a little bit of overnight on Sky 2006. Then around 2007, 2008, I was always doing Monday Night Football overnight. So I was kind of a regular there on all the stuff overnight that no one else wanted to do. So I've done that for a few years. But, it's interesting because when you think about it, I didn't appear on TV till 2006. I'd already been writing about the NFL since 91. So people think you just kind of pop up on TV. That was 15 years. And I didn't get full time on Sky until 2011. That was 20 years after I started writing.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about that, the writing and the broadcasting. And you're still a prolific writer, of course, despite all, you know, the additional broadcasting and podcasting you're doing as well. Is it your first love, or can you look at it in those binary terms? Because I came to writing later. I was the other way around, right? So I, you know, when it was a presenter first and foremost, having, you know, cut my teeth for quite a few years on, you know, doing stand up and kind of bouncing around that. And so, but in terms of writing about the NFL, I did it the other way around. I got, I guess, established as a broadcaster and then wrote. Latterly, but I love writing. I always wanted to do it, but it came to me late, so the other way around. And I can't choose and say I prefer this one to that one. I like them both for different reasons. What about you with the course and the trajectory that you've gone through, and writing being at the core of your professional career? How do you look at the differences? And let's throw in live performance as well, because you have a lot of fun when you do the live shows, the live NFL shows. That's one thing that really comes across. I remember when we first worked together, surprise is maybe the wrong word, but we hadn't really hung out much before other than seeing each other at events. Then we started doing shows together. I realized early on, you got a great sense of humor, and that was really coming across in the broadcast. And that really comes across in all the NFL UK live stuff, particularly, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think you're more so. I think when you look at all three, I think if you were to ask me which one would I be happy to sit and do when I'm retired, I would write for a hobby. You know, so there is a love for writing there. I do love writing my preview magazines. I love writing every week still. I think I'd write a lot more if obviously I wasn't doing the broadcasting. You had a lot more time, you know. So I think writing is a true love there. I think with the live shows, I think I've really enjoyed those. I love bouncing off of the fans. And there's only so much you can do with your sense of humor in a studio when you've got 30 seconds to hit a link and then get to the next feature. There's only so much you can do there. And
it's so true. We were chatting, Tom Deacon was on a recent show, who of course has made his name as a stand-up and transitioned to presenting. We were talking about stand-up during the lockdown and how one of the big problems with it, with comics doing shows from home, is there is quite obviously no audience to feed off in the same way, and the importance and the energy that an audience creates. And you really feel that, don't you, when you can contrast a studio show, which has an energy of itself with your guests, of course, but it's different versus a live show where there is just so much you can feed off from what is happening in the room.
Yeah, I really enjoy the live shows because, again, you're out with the people. I think I've said this many times, different interviews. In the studio, yes, you bounce off your guests, but also you're just looking at a red light above a camera. So yeah. I love being out there interacting with the fans, kind of having some sort of, you know, quick one-liners, but also being a bit more risque, you know?
Push
the envelope a little bit. And I think, you know, I think one of the things with British fans or with British people in general, we like to take the mickey out of each other. And we like to take the mickey out of players and teams and stuff like that. So I do enjoy that with the live shows. And yeah, it's just they're very different because you do have to have a bit more discipline, a bit more structure. I try and bring it into our Sky stuff. And sometimes you're with people that, I think if I go through a rotation of guests, right, on Sky.
Right, quite a lot. It depends who you're with, for sure.
And also, they don't want to be the ones cracking the jokes necessarily. And so I am sometimes the one that will do that, whereas yes. Really want them to ideally do it, and then you react as the presenter. But sometimes I kind of lead the silliness because it's 3 o'clock in the morning and we're watching the divisional round of the playoffs and we've got to be up in 5 hours. And, you know, you just got to enjoy it and relax into it. So,
but they are so very, much so. Particularly those, I remember people talking about the difference at the time when Carson and I were doing the late night shows. And one of the luxuries we had, I guess, was, and I compare that to, say, you know, the London Games and other things I've done at different times, the luxury of doing that late night show, which you've now, you know, experienced for a fair bit with Sky, it is a different dynamic. You can get away with more. There is just a different mindset to it because you know that it's not completely the hardcore following, but obviously the hardcore are definitely there. And I think particularly the newbie fan or the more casual fan that has stumbled across it, you want them to be in the mix as well and not feel excluded and it's too cliquey. So entertainment and having fun with it is a really good way of doing that. And a late night gig gives you the license to do that. I always loved that about the late night Channel 5, Channel 4 shows was that we had that freedom to be able to go in so many different ways with it and have fun. And that's really coming across. And I think, you know, obviously the inclusion of Greg and the Around the NFL boys has given that dimension to Sky. It is a lot of fun.
You could just also, I mean, I don't think they'd ever go this far, but it's Sunday night. It's the end of the weekend. People are sitting with their feet up. I mean, I don't think it would go down that terribly with the fans if we went full Badil and Skinner fantasy football and had our feet up on the desk in our jeans. I mean, it's that, and okay, they're never going to go for that because there's a certain style, but the vibe should be that, really, that we're just sitting down chilling at the end of the weekend and we're watching the sport we love.
Yeah, and I love that and about the NFL community, full stop. And you've been involved in it, as you say, for God, 30 years now, pretty much. It is a real community, isn't it? That in the UK, that there is a sense of, yeah, you and I do what we do and have been lucky enough to do it for a career, and Jeff and Mike and everybody else, but we're all fans. And I think that's what connects us with the fans when we're doing our work and our broadcasts, is that first and foremost, yeah, we have a job to do. We've got to present or give analysis, steer the conversation, whatever it might be. But ultimately, we're all watching this thing together. And I think the nature of NFL in particular, because it keeps breaking, because it keeps coming back to you, because you can react so quickly to what's going on, unlike football, where it's here's the pregame, there's 45 minutes, halftime, 45 minutes, full time. It just creates much more a sense of community that we're all in it together.
It does, because you know, if you take a football match, you could have the most polished presenter who has a passing knowledge or interest in football. And that's not the case. I'm not saying that's the case, but you could, and you could script out everything. Here's your pregame show. Here's halftime. Here's post-game. Let your pundits do the work. We're different because, like you say, so on Sky, they come back to us every 10 minutes, really. It's the same on the BBC. It's the same. You know, every ad break, you're filling.
You're in.
So you can't just put in what I would call a TV person.
Yeah, no chance.
You have to have a knowledge of it. You have to be able to take the conversation anywhere, anytime, and you have to love it. You have to be able to show that passion as well. So I think we are a little bit different, and so we're more a part of the community. So yes. I'll turn up at a tailgate on a Sunday morning outside Wembley Stadium, and I'll know the first five or six guys that are going to be in the front row. And I'll go to an NFL UK Live, and I'll walk over and I'll say hello to this one, hello to that one. And I guess we're lucky in a way that we can do that, because we're not massive to the point of a Rich Eisen, NFL Network, NFL in America. So actually, it's a really cool position to be in as one of the presenters, because you still are, I think, have a foot in the ground with the fans. And again, you watch the game with Dolphins fans. We watch the games. You know, we cheer the same way. People say, "What are you doing in the studio?" I said, "We sit every game. We're looking one way or the other at it. We're cheering about touchdowns. We're out of our seat. That's just being a fan. We're just in a different seat."
Yeah, that's it. That's well put. Speaking of, you know, the games and the broadcast element of it, who's your favorite commentary crew, either of all time or right now? It can be either or both, but I'm very much Michael Collinsworth. And I guess that's probably significantly because, you know, pretty much throughout all of my career with it and the late night, you know, from day one, you know, for years and years, they were the voices alongside me. And so I guess I have that sentimental connection, but just in terms of, I mean, and Michael's is just everything I want in an American sports anchor, and Collins, but they just work so well together. They bounce off each other. They're so they've worked together so long, so that familiarity is, the simpatico is just so fluent and so on point. So they're my top two. What about you?
So back in the day, Madden and Summerall were kind of the ones that I grew up with. And again, you talk about the passion and excitement and what they brought. And Madden was this kind of, had all the sayings and all the phrases and boom and this and that and getting excited. And then Summerall would just be the kind of straight man. I'm with you now. I think Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are the gold standard. And it amazes me. It's funny because sometimes I think, you know, you go into the studio with all these stats and you'll go in with, well, I better have this one up my sleeve and I better drop this one. And I think sometimes as well, I maybe do that because I'm a British guy trying to, I know what I'm talking about or whatever.
Yes.
Actually, you don't, sometimes I listen to what Al Michaels says and I think if I just said that in the studio, I'd get hammered. People would be like, you'd just be like, and we're in New Orleans tonight, and Drew Brees, of course, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
All time.
That's all he says.
Yeah.
And he slips up Collinsworth, and away you go. And I'm like, he actually doesn't say, like, Al Michaels doesn't reinvent the wheel when he's commentating, but he's just got such a great way about him, such an authority, that you don't actually have to overcomplicate it. It's a great lesson, actually, that you can just give the basic information and then let your pundit go and fill in all the gaps. And so that's why I think he's the best in the business.
And I totally agree with that. And I think the understated, you know, in this case, obviously he's a kind of hybrid anchor, obviously at the top of the show is number two, but ultimately, you know, is calling play by play, but with the expert, the analyst alongside him, whichever way you cut that. So whether it is a live game commentary booth or whether it is a studio booth like you and I do, I couldn't agree more that I've always been a champion and a believer and have been influenced massively by those anchors, by those front men that are understated with it. And that doesn't mean that, and I think you have to let your personality come through, and that's part of the trick, isn't it? Where you've got to find that balance where you're not overbearing with it, because that's why the analysts are there. But at the same time, you can't just be an interchangeable and, you know, anonymous persona either. And Michael's, you're right, is the blueprint, the absolute blueprint for that. What is your favorite NFL movie of all time? If you say Wildcats, I'll think even more of you. Come on, it's Wildcats, isn't it?
I do frustrate people whenever they ask me this question because I don't like that many of them.
Right, fair enough.
Because I don't know. I just don't. I guess Here's why.
It's draft day, isn't it?
No, it's not that. I mean, it probably is the original, what's it called? The Longest Yard, the Mean Machine or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I honestly don't watch many of them. And I think this is the reason. I watch so much NFL.
Yes, it's the last thing you want to watch.
I live so much NFL. Yeah. I write so much NFL. So when people, for what people would then do in their spare time and their hobbies would be to go and watch the NFL, the last thing I want to watch is an NFL film.
NFL. Have you watched Ballers?
I haven't, see. So I need to watch that. And that has been recommended to me about 5 times by friends who have no interest in the NFL.
This is it. And I think this is the point with a lot of it. I'm kind of with you as well, that actually I've gone off the boil with Ballers for that reason, that when it comes down to, right, okay, I've got some downtime. Yeah, I want to watch something completely away from what I've been doing for you know, the majority of the day. So I was going to ask on that, because draft day, you've seen draft day, right?
I've only seen bits of it. Okay, I worked an event with Wade Phillips around the draft when that film came out.
Yes.
We watched a couple of bits of it, but I'm still not to this day seen it. Is it not very good?
It's extraordinary. It's not even bad, so it's good, Sharknado style. So it's, I was hoping, and I, look, I'm a big Costner fan. I like a lot of the cast. Dennis Leary was one of my, you know, comedy heroes, and he's quite a polarizing character, because a lot of people think he ripped off Bill Hicks, who was a contemporary of his, and so he's not highly thought of in the comedy world, but I will, you know, be the contrarian that he's a brilliant stand-up, and incidentally, No Cure for Cancer. If you go and look that up, I think all of it is on YouTube. It's his breakthrough stand-up show, is incredible. Anyway, he plays the coach. He plays a kind of grizzled a coach who is in conflict with Costner's GM. The best thing about it is the opening scene when the Seahawks have the first overall pick, and it's the day of draft day when. It's the morning of draft day. They got the number one overall pick, and their GM and presumably the team owner or some other colleague are discussing what they're going to do with the pick. So they've never had the conversation before. So you've got Leary's coaching that. I was going to ask you, Pacino's
coaching. To be fair, there's a few teams that have done that over the years.
Sure. It was the Cleveland Browns as well. Actually, he's using them. So, the Pacino head coach in Any Given Sunday. I was going to ask you to who would you rather be coached by, but if you haven't watched Draft Day, then
forget about
that. I
prefer to watch. So I really enjoy the. I do watch these in my own time. I enjoy the Last Chance U. And the QB1 ones as well on Netflix.
Yeah,
I think they're fantastic. I'd rather watch those, and I actually prefer those to things like Hard Knocks or All or Nothing, because I think they're just a bit grittier.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think I don't know where I'm at with Hard Knocks now. Like, obviously, what is going to happen with Hard Knocks this year, actually? Are they going to be able to make a Hard Knocks this year? I'm not sure they are.
I mean, I don't think at the moment. I mean, I think they can't plan on anything like that, because what's training camp? I mean, whenever they decide to open up the league,
yes,
they're going to have a training camp period, aren't they? So maybe they get it in then, but. You know, who knows? We may be looking at training camp in September and a kickoff in October. I mean, we're in such uncharted territory that we are literally putting a finger in the air and guessing.
What do you think will happen if there is an opportunity to play the season behind closed doors? The NFL presumably will go for that. Fans will go for it initially. But do you think there is a danger with that? That if we're, you know, week 11, whenever the hell that is, of games behind closed doors, where we've got used to it, will it have really impacted our enjoyment of the game?
I think people will go for it, because I think it'd be so desperate for sport and so desperate for you know, that NFL to take center stage and have that. So I think people would be okay with that. I think NFL has always been a TV business. You know, and when he was the head coach of the 49ers, Jim Tomsula once told me, he just said that, you know, the 60,000 people that are in the stadium are just backdrop, their wallpaper for the NFL, and it's all about the TV business. So
but they connect totally, don't they? That the TV product is incredibly enhanced by those 60,000 people. That it's,
I agree.
It really diminishes the, if you look at it that way, and I get it, and I get the money side of it as well, for sure, is weighted that way, but it becomes a very different product, and therefore a very different TV proposition without the fans.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And maybe maybe people would watch as a novelty for a while, but you know, you got to get fans back in there. So yeah, there's no doubt it's going to be different, but there's also no doubt in my mind, if that's the option that the NFL has, they're going to take that. They're going to get on the field and they're going to get the NFL out to the worldwide TV audiences. So, but yeah, it does impact. You go to Seattle, you know, you go to Kansas City, those are different places. With no stadium noise, you go to the Super Bowl. It's just a different vibe. So I don't know how they pull it off, but you know, I don't think they're going to slow down if they can play those games.
Do they have to work out, do you think, when it would be safe to ensure that a Super Bowl could be played in front of fans before they push the button on the go date for the season? In other words, it could work for argument's sake, to use your example, an October start date behind closed doors, but then you roll out 17 weeks playoffs. I don't know if we're going to be able to play a Super Bowl in front of fans at the end of March or whatever it is. Would that force the NFL's hand to delay things until they know the Super Bowl is going to be in front of fans?
I think the Super Bowl has to be in front of fans. You know, I think that's I would agree with you on that. I think you work out, if you know when that's going to be and you work backwards from that, you know, I do think they have, and there's not been that much until recently muted about potentially pushing the season back, but they do have a long old off season. Yeah. So there's a way of doing that. There's wiggle room on the back end. You know, they would make a massive, massive deal of it if the Super Bowl was the first game that was open to the public.
Can you be the biggest Super Bowl of all, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. And what a celebration that would be for everyone coming out of it. So that I agree with you that I'm kind of making the case for being able to play behind closed doors, but you can't play the Super Bowl that way. You have to have fans in the stadium for that big show.
So thinking about the off season, if they can get it together, I think it would make a fascinating Hard Knocks. It would be really, really interesting that the phase when, but I don't know if this would work in terms of timing, but to have all of the stuff that's going on now in terms of virtual meetings and how rookies are getting on board and everything else done in a completely unorthodox fashion, I think would make, if they could work out a way of filming it, which I'm sure they could, would be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I'd hope that they, because I bet the teams are already putting that in. Yeah, they're already videoing that stuff when they're on their virtual workouts, all of that. So I would hope that they, you know, whoever gets Hard Knocks, that gets included, because that is such a big element of this off season. Just how you work with your players, how young rookies, how do they get ready for the season? You know, how are veterans staying in shape on their own? How do you learn stuff? So anything that has a Hard Knocks, if there is one, has to include that this year for sure.
I want to get one current football question in for you on this, because as I said at the very top of the show, we dropped this, recorded this, I should say, at the end of April, and dropping it a little bit later. So might be stories that might have broken. One of the reasons we haven't covered it, but Jordan Love to the Packers. I want to get your take on it, because it hasn't even divided opinion. I think everybody, most people anyway, are really baffled by it, because the Packers are in a win now situation. But I was hearing a really interesting argument that a friend of the show, Ross Tucker, was giving on his pod about the succession plan the Packers are obviously looking at. And they are like no other franchise, really. And you look at the Favre to Rodgers transition, how long they've had a franchise quarterback, more longer than any other team in the NFL, other than obviously the Patriots with Brady, right? So if they felt that Jordan Love is the guy, and presumably they have that conviction to take him in the first round, to reach up for him in the first round, then it's an incredibly savvy pick, isn't it? Because yes, they might compromise what they can do right now, but if they're going to buy, and I know it's a big if, 10 plus years of a similar level quarterback, if they believe that, then you can't criticize them for the pick, can you?
I get that argument, and I had the same argument made to me by Bucky Brooks from NFL Network, who said, you know, they could go for 30 years or 30 plus years of solid quarterback or great quarterback play if Jordan Love is who they think he is.
Yeah.
I get that. I get the protecting of the franchise, but I think everyone's forgetting how bitter the transition from Favre to Rodgers was.
Mm.
And all that transition brought, and I say all that because it's some teams would kill for this. It's brought one Super Bowl victory for Aaron Rodgers.
Mm.
There was such bitterness that they didn't talk to each other, Favre and Rodgers, for years and years before they kind of had a reconciliation. And I said to Bucky, I said, yeah, I get the whole roster building thing, and that's why you go for Jordan Love. But Bucky, you're also a head coach at the high school level, and mm-hmm. coaching's about relationships. And now there is no way Matt LaFleur can sell any of this to Aaron Rodgers. You can't sell right. Jordan Love as an insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. What you're selling to Rodgers there is any successful future with Jordan Love is a future without you. And I know Rodgers, and I know him as a person, and he can be sensitive, and he can be prickly, and he can be outspoken. And apparently, some of the reports you read, the Packers have had enough of that. And that's why they're trying to change this narrative with the drafting of Jordan Love, maybe to put Aaron Rodgers on notice. But, you know, I think Packers fans generally have felt like his team has wasted the opportunity to put talent around him. And if we look back at the entire Aaron Rodgers time in Green Bay and it produced one Super Bowl win, I'd say they wasted a lot of Aaron Rodgers' talent. This right now, this does nothing to help Aaron Rodgers. This does nothing to help him.
And I'd go further than that. I think it's a great point that obviously Rodgers is the most affected by this for the fact they've drafted someone in his position, the fact that that pick could have been somebody on his offense to help him get over the line, which is clearly needed by the Packers right now. But I talk about the other vets or the other captains, the other leaders, heavyweights on that team. They're got to feel the same thing. They're all in the win now situation too. They don't necessarily care about what happens 4 years down the line. Most of them probably won't be Packers players in 4 years. No, so
rosters change so quickly on right. 2-3 year cycles. If you're Christian Kirksey, who's just gone to the Green Bay Packers, and you're 6-7 years into your career, you know, you're probably fortunate to get a 10-year career, so he wants to win now. That's just a player who's not that old as well. So I feel like it doesn't help them at all. And I think I get it from a roster building point of view for the future and safeguarding your future, but I just think you've pulled the rug out from under your franchise player, and I just don't get it. I think it was an unusual move, and then it put pressure on them to do something with the rest of the draft, which they didn't do. And so I was very, very surprised by the whole weekend for the Packers.
We're the first rounder as well. We could just about squeeze. I mean, the Jalen Hurts Philly thing is a different situation. I kind of like that pick a lot more. But even sneaking a third, fourth rounder, you can just about get away with that narrative. But to reach up in the first round, that's going to be a hard sell. But that first all Packers team Zoom meeting for Matt LaFleur is going to be an interesting one. Two more before we get out of Dodge. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers suggesting, and by no means the first, that he can be a tricky customer. I got asked this in an interview the other day, the hardest interview I'd ever done in terms of, and it actually wasn't any fault of his own or any reflection on his character, but my answer was Amari Cooper, because it was when the Raiders were here a couple of years ago, so just before he got dealt, and it was a day that I was at the Packers training camp and had a great sit down with Tyler Lockett, great in the center. We had loads of time. It was really relaxed. Interesting setting outdoors, obviously, where, you know, near where training was going on. He was a great interview, very erudite, really on the upward trajectory. The whole Seahawks organization just had so much positivity and buzz about them. And this was the first Gruden Raiders season, which I think it's fair to say was the diametric opposite at the time. And zipped over, you might well have been there, either or both, but their presser at the Hilton near Wembley, which was fractious to say the least. It started early and everything else. And Gruden was frustrated and prickly and everything else. And I got a message on my WhatsApp from our friend David Tossel to say, I've got him, he's ready for the interview. sort of looked over at my producer, like, got who? Like, no. And there'd been a breakdown of communication. We hadn't been told that I was meant to be interviewing Amari Cooper. So I had no idea I was interviewing. We had to break out. I had to get my question in for Gruden, which, because we were filming that, which yeah. was, I threw a kind of curveball, or not curveball, but a fairly direct question about, is this a free hit season? Because he's got a 10-year gig, so his job is pretty safe. Hoping he'd take the bait. And he kind of did. He saw his eyes kind of glint, and better than he kind of straight batted it back. The duck out, round the corner, and in one of those odd conference, or those rather anodyne conference rooms in a hotel, was, I didn't even know who I was interviewing, you know, was Amari Cooper. And it's like, okay. And bless him, he was not the most forthcoming of characters. Clearly not in a happy place with the Raiders, which 48 hours later became incredibly apparent. And it was just pulling teeth. I mean, my God. And I had to think on the fly as well, like, okay, what am I going to ask him? But that's part of the gig. So Amari Cooper was my most awkward, fractious, difficult interview. What was yours? What's the hardest one you've done?
So you won't be surprised to learn it would be Bill Belichick. so 2009 summer at training camp with the Patriots, and I got the one-on-one with Belichick because they were coming over to play in London.
Right.
And I got so I'm sitting in a tent. I don't know if you've been to Patriots training camp.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, we interviewed Belichick. We did the year before, it must have been 2008, summer 2008. We did. We went there and. Because, you know, Carlson was at college with him.
Yeah, yeah.
So Carlson, it was, you know, so we must have been in exactly the same, the media room, all the jaded beat writers. And what are you doing out here? What are you doing? We explained with getting lots of color pieces for the season. And, oh, we're going to do an interview with Coach Belichick. And they were just laughing, going, yeah, sure you are. He's not good. He doesn't do any one-on-one. So they said, oh, yeah. I think he's going to do an interview because my co-host went to college with him. They looked at me like, who is this kid? Like, what is going on? And then sure enough, we get wheeled out to the back to do this interview with Belichick. Yeah. So yeah, I know the place well.
I'm sitting in the tent above the end zone watching training camp, and I'm right up against the sort of canvas edge of the tent, but it's only a thin tent. And the PR guy from the Patriots is the other side of the tent talking to one of his staff members. Yeah, what a pain in the ass. Got these guys from England. And I'm trying to do the literally 3 inches away from you, and you're slagging me off.
Amazing.
So I'm already laughing about that, feeling really welcome to be in New England. And yeah. They basically rushed us, all the training camp fields are outside, they rushed us inside the stadium, made me stand on the 50-yard line at Gillette Stadium, and then Belichick comes in, and of course it's like,
oh, God.
It's like blood out of a stone. I'm trying to get a line on Brady being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and he's like, yeah, Tom's pretty good. We're happy to have him. And so then in 2012, this is brilliant. I went back to the Patriots, and I didn't get Belichick that time. So I got Belichick first time, not Brady. Second time, I got Brady, not Belichick. But the day before we did Brady, we did everyone else. We did Gronk. I think it was Wes Welker, mm-hmm. Vince Wilfork. We interviewed them in the toilets. I kid you not, they set us up in the toilets.
Why?
They set us up in the toilets. Well, I think because that's the whole level of respect I had from the
good,
New England.
Good program. Acoustics. Is it the same PR guy? I remember you.
It was. So that was interesting.
That is great. I remember being, I think it was the same trip actually that I was just talking about. We also went to Albany for Giants training camp. And that was when, and the Carlson dines out on this one, loves reminding me every opportunity, when I kind of veered onto the field to record a link, and practice stopped, and Coughlin basically stopped. Who is that idiot? Get him off my field. This is my
learned the hard way.
Yeah, I learned the hard way. One more for you before we let you go, Neil. We had Stig Abel on the show quite recently recommending books to read in this lockdown period when we want to feed our minds and keep distracted. And he was great and had some wonderful suggestions. You must have a whole ton of books that you can recommend. What would be, you know, your favorites to recommend to our listeners to get into right now?
So I think anything from Jeff Perlman. Mm. Who wrote the most recent one was about the whole story of the USFL in the 80s. But
right.
My favorite is his kind of biography of Brett Favre. And it's a great piece of journalism because he tells you everything you need to know about Favre without speaking to Favre. Mm. And he speaks to, but he says, I interview about 400 people, including all his coaches, his sister, his mum and dad. So it was really interesting that it was everyone apart from the man it's about. I love that one. So anything, Jeff Perlman, he wrote a biography on Walter Payton as well, which is actually quite controversial. So yeah, check out.
He did the Boys,
great writer. So anything NFL wise by Jeff Perlman would be my recommendation.
Great shout. Love that. A fine way to wrap up the show. One more time there. Neil Reynolds podcast. Listen to that, download that. So you mentioned Peter King's up next. Have you got any others you can reveal in the pipeline?
No, because I haven't got the final yes yet. I'll tell you some. I've pre-recorded some. So I've pre-recorded.
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, no, I've pre-recorded Brian Balding, Balding Network, Cliff Averill. Mm. I've done a couple of the around the NFL guys, Dan Hansus, Chris Westlin. But I'm actually big game hunting at the moment. So I've got a couple of really big names that are having a nibble, but nothing committed yet. So
good time to get them, I guess, right now, isn't it?
They're out.
Well, congrats with it, mate. It's great to see, and it's great to see it's doing so well and you're doing so well. Thanks for dropping by and chatting to me and catching up with us, and we'll catch up with you soon, I hope.
Yeah, my pleasure, and stay safe.
Lovely stuff. As I said, lots of pods coming your way. More chats where that came from. Carson's coming up soon. We're going to check in with Jay Bell. A lot of your favorites over the coming weeks and months. The MC show rolling thick and fast. That is where you follow us on social media, incidentally. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, lots of extra stuff going out on there as well. And if you haven't already, subscribe to us. Leave a nice review, because you know the drill by now. It makes Harry, the producer, a very happy man. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.